Central on the Sportsnet Radio Network is brought to you by Home Hardware. Homeowners helping homeowners with expert advice. More analysis of your Toronto Blue Jays and Major League Baseball. This is Baseball Central on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
All right, welcome to Baseball Central, brought to you by Home Hardware. I'm Jeff Blair alongside Kevin Barker.
How we doing?
We're doing well. We just had a spirited debate trying to figure out whether Virginia Tech or the University of Manitoba, which of those two schools has better academics. I think we've kind of come to the conclusion that we're probably not the two. We're probably not the people to be having that debate.
Probably not.
Anyhow, I am impressed to know that you pursued a liberal arts degree in university.
I'm just asking how it turned into the Hokies playing Saturday in football to us talking about that.
I don't know.
I'm not real sure.
How's their football team looking this year?
Not very good. It's a quarterback. You have to have a good quarterback, and I don't even know who that is.
Whoa.
Wow. What just happened there?
Okay. It sounded like somebody
trying to get us to shut up and talk about something else.
I guess that was scary. Anyhow, it is Baseball Central with Jeff Blair and Kevin Barker. As I said, brought to you by Home Hardware and the Sportsnet Radio and Television Network. Hey, guess what? The Blue Jays won last night.
Don't act surprised.
God love them. They snapped their losing streak, beating the Red Sox 5-2. Danny Valencia, his first career homer as a member of the Blue Jays. Marcus Stroman, 7 2/3, 5 hits, 2 runs, 1 earned, 1 walk, 6 Ks. His ERA is now 3.88. He threw 112 pitches. He's 8-5 in the year. And there was a lot of concern and a lot of talk about Marcus Stroman's past couple of starts. Might he be hitting a wall? Nothing panicky, just the stuff you expect from young pitchers. There was even talk yesterday that the Blue Jays were going to take his curveball away from him for a game. But, man, I watched him. You watched that performance last night. And first of all, Kevin.
Right.
When's the last time you've seen a pitcher slap the manager in the butt?
I've never seen that.
After he takes him out of the game. That, to me, says Marcus Stroman's a pretty confident kid.
Well, yeah, he's comfortable. And I think that says also a lot about John Gibbons. I think he's a true player's manager. I think he's probably the only guy in the big leagues you could do that to, being a manager-wise. And, you know, you had a young guy go out and pitch a heck of a game and make adjustments. That's what the game's all about, is making an adjustment. How do you win when you don't have good stuff? Well, the last two starts he had, he didn't do that. Yesterday he had real good stuff, which when you have all your pitches working, that sets up everything. That means you can throw your fastball on both sides of the plate and his breaking ball. Marcus Stroman's like no other guy because he relies a lot on that breaking ball. That breaking ball sets up a lot of stuff. And sometimes, you know, most of the time he doesn't have to throw it for strikes. And when he doesn't throw it for strikes, that sets up his sinker and his cutter. And he can, like I said, he can move the fastball on both sides of the plate. And when he's doing that, he's really good. But That's the good thing about young guys. You talk about making adjustments in the big leagues. Hitters have to do it to pitchers, and pitchers have to do it to hitters. It's no different. The word's around that sometimes he's a two-pitch pitcher, which means that breaking ball is not working, and hitters just don't go up looking for it. They don't have to. Yesterday they had to do that, and you saw what happened. He has really good games. He gets ahead, and he gives his team a chance to win.
Kevin, now that we've seen this guy for a number of starts, his size, his shortness, his lack of stature, whatever you want to call it.
Sure.
At times it almost seems to benefit him when I watched a couple of pitches, and it's almost like the size benefits him, because you get the impression guys are kind of at the plate, some of their reactions, they're kind of surprised at times. You know, are you seeing the same thing,
yeah,
you guys?
Well, I think that's why you got to love baseball. Baseball, it really doesn't matter how tall you are or how big you are, or any of that. It matters how big your heart is. And he's one of those guys that wears his heart on his shoulder. It means he goes out every day and leaves it on the field. That's all you can do is, let's face it, he's a young guy trying to establish himself in the American League East. And it's like you said, he's a smaller guy. He has to do more than other people. That's just part of baseball. You have to show up, so to speak, meaning that when, you know, you're not big in stature, you have to go out there and show them something. And, man, to me, the one guy in that rotation that we're going to say is untouchable is this guy, because his upside to me is a lot greater than the other guys. And and when you say the upside, meaning that guy can dominate. Now, whether he's the number one starter, that's going to be tough to say. But that two and three starter, which every team has to have those guys, man, he's making a sure big case for that.
Yeah, I was just I was just wondering, having listened to a couple of broadcasts, a couple of visiting teams broadcasts when Stroman has been pitching, they've made a point about how, with his size, maybe the arm angle or something, coupled with the short with his size, just seems to really baffle guys. His stuff's good, obviously, and he throws hard, but you know, you do tend to judge.
Maybe sometimes that's why he has trouble getting on top of his breaking ball.
Right.
And he leaves the breaking ball up. That's what, maybe why Pete Walker said you need to me yesterday, it looked like he changed his arm angle a little bit on the breaking ball, which means he was getting on the side of the breaking ball and how's that downward away movement instead of that right over the top 12 to 6 movement. And it's like you said, maybe because he's not 6'5", he can't get on top of that thing and drill that thing down and in or down in the dirt. Maybe that's why they're changing the arm angles.
The Jays, by the way, are 5.5 out in the wild card race. Still a lot of ground to make up. There's three teams between them and Oakland and Seattle tied for the wild card spot right now. Detroit, we're going to talk about the Tigers later, and then David Price's unbelievable day. The Yankees are 2.5 back. They are in town this weekend for a three-game series against the Blue Jays. It'll be your last chance to see Derek Jeter at the Rogers Center. The Cleveland Indians, very quietly, 4.5 back, a game ahead of the Jays in the wild card standings. And of course, Baltimore, the Orioles are setting the pace in the American League. Although Drew Smyly last night struck out 6, walked 1 over 7 innings, and just absolutely shackled the Orioles. And get a load of this: in 18 career appearances against AL East teams, Drew Smyly is 6-0 with a 1.32 ERA. And, folks, we're going to be seeing a lot of him in the American League East down there. That was a hell of a pickup.
Well, you mentioned that team. They don't have Matt Moore either. You add that guy to Alex Cobb and Hellickson and Archer, man, you got five guys in your rotation that you can go lefty, righty with, and you can match up late in season with good teams that are predominantly left-handed, man. You're gonna have it's like you said earlier, if this team hadn't been hurt early in the season, we've been having a whole different conversation here.
By the way, Kevin Pillar is going to join us at 12:15. Kevin Pillar was called up, contributed last night, a hustling double,
man.
And we're going to talk about that as well. You know the story with Kevin Pillar, of course. A lot of us have been questioning why he wasn't up here sooner. We'll talk to Kevin Pillar about that and see what he has to say about that. Junichi Tozawa, again, struggling against the Blue Jays. God, 19 games against the Blue Jays. He's got an ERA of 6.87 at the Rogers Center. It's 9.00. Jose Bautista hit his 26th home run last night. Also told Ara Rashmadani that he would love to finish his career here. Colby Rasmus missed his second game with flu-like symptoms. And Brett Cecil, man, out of the bullpen, got the save. And I think, Kevin, we're going to talk about Danny Valencia's at-bat. We're going to go through that pitch by pitch. But before we do that, I want to just talk about Brett Cecil, because we were talking before the show. Look, Casey Jansen's not coming back next year. I think we can say that's a done deal.
Yep.
Brett Cecil possibly factor into the closer's role? And bear in mind that he did close at college, and the Jays at one point thought about him as potentially being a closer.
Yeah, on the one hand, I think his fastball, he needs to add a couple miles an hour to that just to make that breaking ball better. But last night, man, when he can come out and throw that breaking ball, it was devastating. Last night he was throwing it to really good hitters in the good part of the lineup, and they knew it was coming. And when you can throw things and good hitters know they're coming and still throw it by guys, man, you have to say that now John Gibbons has two guys he can go to late in the game, can go match up, because like you said, Casey Jansen's not pitching the way he normally does. And when you're not doing that and you have two guys you can go to, man, it's this can only bode well for your team, especially late in season, especially when you go matchups against good teams in the American League East late in seasons.
And my one concern about Brett, and I get what you're saying about he would need to add a couple of miles mm-hmm. an hour to his fastball, because I don't necessarily want my closer to be a guy whose best pitch is a field pitch.
Yeah.
Because I can't afford to have a guy who may not be on.
Well, yeah.
Bringing him in the ninth inning.
You're the best closer ever had one pitch. So you get...
Yeah, but
that
was a freak, though. That was a freaky. That was also a fastball.
It gets back to, you have a couple of options. You have Aaron Sanchez, again, that can throw sinkers at 99.
Mm-hmm.
Name a guy in the show who can do that. There's not many. You could count them on one hand, I'm sure. That's options. You have mm-hmm. guys in that bullpen late in games that can stop, especially when your team has a real tough time scoring runs, and then they do come back and score runs when they're behind, and then you have back end of bullpens where you're really flipping a coin on who you go to, because let's face it, the Blue Jays don't have a setup guy, and now they don't have a legitimate closer because the one they do have is struggling. It makes it real hard for teams get back to when they rely on outscoring people, and then when you do outscore somebody and you get one guy to come in and shut a team down, and they can't do that, man. It makes it a mental aspect when it comes to coaching and the players on that team. Just how many runs do we have to score? So, it's going to be interesting to see down the stretch here how they go, but you would think that Brett Cecil's a very good option.
It is Baseball Central with Jeff Blair and Kevin Barker, brought to you by Home Hardware. All right, Danny Valencia's first Blue Jays home run was a mm-hmm. difference maker last night, 3-run shot. I want to go through this at-bat pitch by pitch if we can, Kevin, because I know you've got some things you want to say about this at-bat with Danny Valencia. Well, those of you watching on TV mm-hmm. will see it. Kevin will walk you through in the radio.
Yeah, well, you get back to having approach. Mm-hmm. When's the last time that we saw the Blue Jays right there? You go fastball away. Obviously, he's not looking for something away. Danny Valencia is a dead red fastball hitter in, mm-hmm. and when you get it, late in games, especially facing guys in the bullpen that come in just to get a guy out like you, and you do that. That's what we talked about. We talked about the Blue Jays. When's the last time they had a great approach with guys in scoring position late in games? You can't name a time. Mm-hmm. It's real hard to say 2 weeks ago that this guy had it. You can't say that. So when a guy comes off the bench, is pinch hitting for somebody, obviously hasn't been on the field, and he comes to the game, has an approach, knowing what you can and can't hit, meaning I can't hit a fastball away, why swing at it? Guy first and third, it's a big part of the game. I put a good swing on this thing, I can help my team. Danny Valencia does it. This is what I'm talking about. He gets a fastball in, and ever since he's been here, he hammers fastballs in.
Mm-hmm.
Why not go up looking for it? He throws him a fastball in, and he hits a 3-run homer. So that's what I'm talking about. You just have to feed off of things like that. Doing things like that is how you get into winning streaks.
Yeah, and, look, the guys that the Jays have right now on the bench, I think some of them will probably be back next year. I would be surprised if Danny Valencia isn't back. We've talked about Juan Francisco. I'd like to have Juan Francisco back just because of that bat off the bench.
Right.
Well, what do you think? Is Danny Valencia a guy that the Jays may try to bring back next year as a bench guy?
Maybe not next year, but I think the rest of the year you're going to see him playing a lot more third base just mm-hmm. because of the way he can hit fastballs. And I've been the first guy to take up for Juan Francisco.
Yes, you have.
Just by what he can do with the bat. But the more you watch him, and he's just not making adjustments. And now they need production
mm-hmm.
1-9. And when you're not getting it from a certain spot, you got to go to the next guy. And right now Juan Francisco's not getting it done at third base. Who do you go to? Well, Danny Valencia is coming off that huge at bat. I'm sure in the next 4 or 5 or 6 games, you're going to see somebody different than Juan Francisco at third.
Well, the Yankees will start Chris Capuano, who's a left-hander, on Friday.
Oh,
there'll be a couple of right-handers mm-hmm. Coming in after that. Michael Pineda and Brandon McCarthy. We're going to talk about Brandon McCarthy, the other, towards the end of the show. So it would stand to reason that Danny Valencia likely gets a start on Friday. And, yeah, look, I've said about Juan Francisco, I think he's a guy you can have in the bench. He can crush a fastball. But I'm beginning to wonder, the more I watch him play, mm-hmm. I don't think I can afford to carry a guy as a bench player just for his bat, can I? I mean, I've got to be able to put him out in the field as well. And yeah. I just see him, he just doesn't get he doesn't get to enough balls for my liking.
Okay, let's just say that it's not Juan Francisco's fault because he's had to play on an everyday basis. It's
right.
not his fault. Just that's the way it's worked out. And people, the opposing teams have taken advantage of him not being able to hit a breaking ball. And we all know that the game of baseball is the game of adjustments. And he's not making adjustments per at bat because that's how guys are getting him out. If he doesn't swing at a breaking ball, how much better of a hitter would he be? It would be stupid because most of the breaking balls are balls.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't swing at those balls, then you get counts in your favor and you get to fastball counts, and he's just not doing that. And it's like you said, you can't just carry a guy in the American League just to come off the bench in the seventh or eighth inning and face a guy throwing 100. I'm not real sure you can do that. You have to have a spot for him, meaning he can come in and play defense at third or come in at first base. He's not going to do that because, you know, most of the time you'd have an Adam Lind or an Edwin Encarnacion. So it's like you said, it's going to be very interesting to see what they do with him because, let's face it, every day he can't play, and they can't carry a guy that plays once every 2 weeks. So mm-hmm. it's going to be really interesting.
Well, one guy who looks – at least every time we see him play, as if he can contribute to this team, is Kevin Pillar. We saw that double last night, a hustling double, and Kevin Pillar joins us on Baseball Central from the Jose Bautista Golf Tournament. First of all, Kevin, welcome back to the majors. It's been too long. Let me ask you this. What went through your mind when you were told you were coming up to Toronto?
Any guy in the minor leagues, you know, looks forward to that phone call from their coach down there, letting you know that you're going back to the show. And it came maybe. I didn't really expect it to come at that point, especially being down in Buffalo. And I know they're pretty adamant about winning down there and wanting to keep the affiliate in Buffalo. And we were on a nice little run down there. And you know, I was just putting in my work, hoping to get in the playoffs down there, and then looking forward to a September call-up. And, you know, I was actually at my truck in the parking lot kind of getting things in order because we were heading out on the road ourselves, and my manager down there called me and told me I was going back up.
Yeah, Kevin, congratulations on being the MVP in Buffalo. That's pretty awesome, man. But the difference between seeing you then and seeing you now, to me, is bat speed. Your bat speed looks a lot quicker. You're getting to fastballs that you didn't before. Is there something you worked on when you went to AAA to make that better so the next time you came here?
Yeah, I definitely worked on a lot of things. When I got sent down, I kind of was, you know, I was actually doing the same thing I was doing when I was up in the big leagues, and I was getting away with it. And it was actually the series right before the All-Star break down there. I had a tough series. I felt like I was late on some stuff, mm-hmm. and at first I thought it was just fatigue because it had been a long year. So after the All-Star break, I was back home in California, just kind of doing some thinking. And when I got back to Buffalo, I decided to change my stance and just be a little bit shorter and quicker to the ball. And, you know, everything I worked on, you know, wasn't necessarily to put numbers up in Buffalo, but to prepare me when I got back up to the big leagues. And I feel like the key up there is you got to let the ball travel because guys sink it, they cut it late, and obviously you got to be able to sit back on the breaking balls because they look like heaters a little bit longer. And I think more than anything, just the adjustment in my stance, having my hands a little bit lower and not as big of a load, is allowing me to stay short and quick.
Mm-hmm. Kevin Pillar joins us on Baseball Central. Kevin, of course, I know you were asked about this a lot by the writers when you came back, and by other people as well. That whole incident in the dugout and John Gibbons' reaction to it, I'm just going to ask you flat out, did you think that you were in the manager's bad books when you went down there, and did you maybe someplace in your heart of hearts wonder if you were done as a member of the Toronto Blue Jays?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, being a younger guy, not established, you know, what seemed to be questioning the manager's decision, and Yeah, I definitely thought my days were numbered, possibly in Toronto, and I definitely thought I was in definitely in the doghouse with not only Gibby but the entire organization. And you know, it took me a couple weeks, honestly, in AAA to bounce back. And I think the thing that got me through was you know, kind of looking up in the stands and seeing that, you know, there's tons of scouts that come to these games, and there is 29 other teams. And, you know, I never wanted to be a guy who burned my bridge with an organization, but I think that kind of got me through, you know, those tough times, and, you know, followed up by maybe a couple weeks after that, having Andrew Tinnish come down and kind of talk to the voice of the front office, tell me that, you know, what had happened was over with, you moved on, you served your time. You know, there just hasn't been opportunity for you to come up again. We like what you're doing. Keep playing hard. When the opportunity arises, you'll get another shot. And you know, I was looking forward to, but also dreading the conversation with Gibby. I didn't really know. I didn't really have much contact with him. We didn't have much of a conversation after I had left. And you know, I walked in there first thing when I got there. For the worst, and I was pleasantly surprised with our conversation. You just told me it came at a bad time. Obviously, you know, it wasn't smart on my part. He understood where I was coming from in that moment, but you know, a lesson had to be learned, and you know, he told me that I earned my way back up here and just go out there and play hard, and when you're called on, go out there and do your thing.
Yeah, Kevin, let me ask you, the Jays' problem all year has been scoring with guys on base and late in games with two outs or less than two outs. Is there anything that Kevin Seitzer's saying the second half here to maybe help you guys just approach-wise, how you guys go and approach a certain pitcher with guys on base?
Yeah, you know, I've only been here just the last couple of years. I know Seitz works real hard in his preparation for all these pitchers that we're going to face.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like, you know, on top of that, a lot of the players here are doing their own homework on the pitchers. And I feel like, you know, everyone's stepping into the box extremely prepared. And sometimes it doesn't matter how hard you prepare. Sometimes it's just a matter of getting it done. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, I know we got the guys in that locker room that, you know, want to be the guy in that situation and want to come through. And, you know, baseball is just a funny game. Sometimes it just doesn't happen. You know, and last night was a, you know, perfect instance with Valencia coming off the bench and hitting that huge 3-run home run.
Kevin, listen, it's good of you to join us today. I'm going to let you get back to the Jose Bautista golf tournament. It's good to see you up here again, and keep it going.
Yeah, good luck, Kevin.
I appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
Yeah. Take care. That is Kevin Pillar of the Toronto Blue Jays. You know, actually, that slide at home last night reminded me of that the slide earlier in the year when the Jays were on that roll, a slide at home plate when Pillar kind of you know, belly flopped across. And we've talked about this a lot, Kevin. Kevin Pillar and Anthony Ghost, they were part of things here when things were going pretty well.
Well,
and I think a lot of us thought, we understand the reasons behind this, and I love the way Kevin described that discussion with John Gibbons, because you've seen this with players. I've seen it with guys, not as much as you, because I haven't been around, obviously, around the locker room as much as you have. But I think a lot of us were wondering when his penance was going to be over.
Right. Well, I think most of the time when I saw it, players that did this just weren't around. The organizations just got rid of them.
Yes.
That's just the way baseball is. When you're not in tune with the way organizations are trying to win games, they just get rid of you. And it's good to see a guy like Kevin Pillar that has gotten a second chance, because he is a good player and he can help this team. And you've noticed that speed never slumps. And hustle, you can always go out and hustle to first. You can always get those hustle doubles like he did. Managers then, when they see players doing that and leaving it on the field, they don't want to send you down. They don't want to get rid of you because you can help a team. They don't have to come to you and say, well, you need to run harder. That's just part of baseball. And it's great to see a guy like Kevin Pillar getting a second chance and coming to the big leagues and doing what he's supposed to do, knowing his role, knowing that he's supposed to get on any way he possible can late in games to give his chance a team to win. And yesterday's a prime example of him doing it and helping his team win, because now the Blue Jays have to win games. Mm-hmm. There's no more of these losing five or six games in a row, because the next time they lose five or six in a row, it's, I mean, really, you can realistically say it's over. So it's good to see guys like this knowing their roles, doing what they're supposed to do, and helping their team win.
What do you see, Kevin, as the upside for Kevin Pillar and Anthony Gose? Could both of these guys be everyday players next year? Is there some sort of platoon situation they might fit in? What do you see their upside, or are we looking essentially at Pillar and Gose as being bench guys?
Well, I see Kevin Pillar maybe being that fourth outfielder, because he can play center field. You always say that the fourth outfielder has to be able to play center field.
Right.
He has speed, and he can hit the fastball. Other than Anthony Gose hasn't shown us enough that he can consistently hit a fastball, because if you hit the fastball, you can work around not being able to hit a breaking ball, which means you just don't swing at it.
Mm-hmm.
And we're seeing Juan Francisco, not wanting to pick on Juan Francisco, but if you just stop swinging at the breaking ball because you can't hit it, you're going to get more fastballs. So that's what I see Kevin Pillar is. He, to me, his bat is just faster. It's quicker. He's getting to fastballs, whether it be more of a comfort thing, because it's late in seasons, and making huge adjustments, which means he moved his bat, his hands way down.
And that is a big adjustment for a hitter, isn't it?
That's a big adjustment, because normally when you move your bat down, it takes you longer to get to the ball, which means most people that move them down have to move them back up to hit again.
Right.
So when you do that, that's more parts to your swing, which means more parts, which means longer. And it just seems to me like Kevin Pillar, it's more of a mental thing.
Mm-hmm.
That I've moved my hands down, it feels comfortable to me, I can get the bat head out in front of the plate. Regardless of what pitch it is, you have to get the bat head out in front of the plate to hit the ball. That's just the way baseball is. To be consistent, the more times you put the bat head on the ball, the more times you're going to have more chances of getting hit. So I just think Kevin Pillar is a better hitter right now than Anthony Gose. Not saying that Anthony Gose can't become a better hitter, but you just think he's a little bit more advanced, knowing that I'm a fastball hitter. I need to figure out ways to do that more consistent. And the more consistent I do it, the more I'm going to play. So, and that's all part of being a big leaguer. Anthony Gose hasn't done that yet. Kevin Pillar has. So I just think maybe the next year, at least the next first half of the season, you're going to see Kevin Pillar playing more than Anthony Gose.
It is Baseball Central. Jeff Blair and Kevin Barker, brought to you by Home Hardware. I guess that's what they say when baseball people say trust your hands if you're a hitter.
Yeah, but it's more of a comfort thing. It's not, it doesn't somewhat look comfortable.
Right.
I mean, Kevin Pillar doesn't look real comfortable because he has his Edwin Encarnacion used to have his hands up.
Yes.
Now he has them down just because it's a comfort level. It's something that's it clicked to him one day when he was hitting in a batting cage. Hey, let's move my hands down. How's that feel? Oh, that feels great. Now I can get the bat head out in front of the plate, and Kevin Pillar does it. That's what we say. We beat this to death. It's pitchers have to do it. Hitters have to do it. They have to make adjustments. The more adjustments you make early in your career, the more time you're going to spend in the big leagues, and you're not going to be that guy that goes up and down 15 times a year because you're not hitting.
Which major league pitcher said last night that he had just pitched the worst game of his life? We'll tell you when Baseball Central returns on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Network.
Cooler than Math Club and almost as cool as Chess Club. The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Back to more Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, welcome back to Baseball Central. The Jays have tonight off, but as you heard after the update, if you're listening to Sportsnet 590 The Fan, we will have Buffalo Bisons baseball tonight on the radio. The Bisons will play Scranton-Wilkes-Barre. I just like saying Barre. Huh. Scranton-Wilkes-Barre. The Railroaders, or the Rail Riders.
Whatever. Riders.
Rail Riders.
It's not whatever, it's Riders.
Canadian Chris LaRue on the mound for Scranton. And Kendall Graveman will be pitching for the Bisons. He's a guy that just like rocketed through the organization this year. He's flavor of the month. He's flavor of the month alongside Daniel Norris. So anyhow, that's at Seven Bells. By the way, our crack research staff, Travis McKenzie, did come up with the enrollment numbers for the University of Manitoba.
Let that go,
and Virginia Tech. And Virginia Tech's enrollment is 29,000, which probably includes about 17,000 scholarship athletes. The University of Manitoba has an enrollment of 25,000, all of whom are legitimate degree-seeking individuals.
I'm sure that's everything you just said there, I'm sure is true.
See, you didn't think. When I said that I went to the University of Manitoba, you figured what? 5,000, like an agricultural college?
I didn't figure anything. Let's get that straight. I didn't figure anything. I just, the way you said it was funny because I just mentioned, are you going to watch my team play Saturday? And then you blew it up to this, that I have, Virginia Tech has more people enrolled at their school. I don't know how it turned into that. I was just excited about, you know, college football starting and this happened.
I'll watch college football before I watch the NFL. I admit, but I just won't go out of my way to watch either of them.
That's unbelievable.
Lots of soccer on though. We're gonna drag you down to Scalawags or something like that and get you watching soccer.
That's gonna be tough for you to do that.
I think you'd be a big I could see you being big down there. You have a lot of fun. You get drink a lot very early in the morning and
yeah. I don't do that. I have a kid.
Okay. Lots to talk about around the majors last night. Starting with David Price. A couple of things here. Drew Smyly and David Price were both pitching yesterday. Drew Smyly, of course, the starting pitcher that was part of the deal for David Price in that trade deadline, trade between the Tigers and the Tampa Bay Rays. And Rays, Drew Smyly has been just outrageously good.
Yeah, but you can't compare the two. They're on two different kinds of teams.
No, they are. They're on two different types of teams. Yeah. But this is what happened last night. We'll have the visuals for those of you watching on TV, and we'll talk about it. Mm-hmm. On the radio. But David Price said after the game, this was the worst game of his life. He gave up nine consecutive hits.
That's unbelievable.
And I mean, there's smoke. There were not a lot of bloopers or bleeders there. Nine consecutive hits. Kevin, I want to ask you, as a guy who stood at home plate, as a guy who's faced major league pitching, how does that happen? What does that say to you?
Okay, I'm going to say this right now. I know everybody on the radio can't see what we're watching, but every one of those pitches are right down the middle. I mean, let's say that. We talk about why they have the black part on that plate, and even a David Price has to pitch on the black part, not the white part. Well, everyone, he just showed four hits right there. All four of them are center cut. You can't do that in the big leagues, and especially to a team that's hot like the Yankees. You just can't do that. It gets back to where you're pitching. And you know, David Price, it came to Detroit to
the face
in spots like this. And when you're not pitching, when you have to do things like that, this is what makes it harder because every pitch matters. And when every pitch matters, man, it's you just can't pitch in the middle of the plate. When you pitch in the middle of the plate, it's you're going to get hurt. Even a David Price, you saw it, he got hurt.
Yeah, and we do have the audio of David Price talking after the game.
I've had bad games before, you know, not that bad, but it's probably the worst game I've ever had in my life. But I've been there before. It's not going to stop. The way I work the next 4 days is not going to stop. You know, my love for the game of baseball. It's just it was one of those days, and you know, everybody has them. You know, hopefully in 5 days when I take the mound again, it's going to be a lot better.
Kevin, I got to ask you that one of the things that the Tigers were talking about afterwards, Tigers, Brad Osmussen, they were going to go back. They were going to sit down in the video room and see if he was tipping pitches, which is we always talk about guys tipping pitches.
Always.
But it's a reminder, isn't it, that in this game you can be the greatest pitcher out there, and David Price is one of the three best pitchers in baseball. But late in the year, guys are really locked in. Guys are really looking for stuff. And if there's a little thing that you're doing that helps guys out, they'll jump all over it.
Here's how I feel about that. I think there's between a guy standing on the mound and a hitter there's so short of a time span between him going in his windup and actually throwing the ball. Being a guy that used to hit it a lot and try to figure things out like that, because the older I got, the more I tried to cheat. That's just the way it was to get the head out in front of the plate. If he was showing me a fastball, it's very, very hard to do that. And an established pitcher like David Price, I'm going to say that's not the case. The case is, we talked about this the last time Marcus Stroman pitched, that he was giving up pitches. Well, the difference is between Marcus Stroman this time he pitched and the last time is he made good pitches. David Price right there yesterday was not making good pitches, leaving balls up out over the plate. And when you do that to good teams in August and the 1st of September, that's what's going to happen to you no matter who you are. Until you start making good pitches, so we can say this, they can go back and look as much film as you want. They should go back and look at where the pitches were at when he threw them. They were really right down the middle and up. And when you do that, like I said, it's going to be real hard to get big league hitters out.
How concerned would you be if you were the Detroit Tigers right now? You're half a game out of the wild card, so you're certainly not out of it by any stretch of the imagination. But they're just not. Miguel Cabrera isn't hitting. They're not. Man. They're not playing well. I mean, you watch some of their games on TV. I wouldn't say they're sloppy, but there's just a real lack of energy around that team. It's surprising.
Yeah, well, it gets back to Kansas City. I think sometimes you just look at a team and think it's their year. And when you look at Kansas City, it just looks like it's their year. And Detroit's not playing good at all, and they're only half a game out. That's what you have to look at. You have to look at where they're at. And I think the biggest key to me is Anibal Sanchez. When he went down, being a guy that can go a third starter and also be your number one when things are going wrong, and now possibly you're not going to have him the rest of the season, and if you make the playoffs, you're probably not going to have him then too. That's a big hole to fill, even on a team that has five number ones. And then on top of that, you're not hitting. When all of those things come about at the end of the year, it's just impossible to win games because all the other teams are doing that much more to win games. When other teams are playing well and you're not, that, you know what that means? You're losing and you're falling behind. And Detroit can only hope that they stop the bleeding and start hitting, because ask the Blue Jays, when you don't hit, you don't win.
It's Baseball Central with Kevin Barker and Jeff Blair. A couple of newsy items from around the majors last night. Adam Wainwright of the Cardinals telling the St. Louis media that he's got a, quote, dead arm after another average start. Surprising, at least. You don't see that with Adam Wainwright. Most people look at him as a bit of a workhorse. Masahiro Tanaka pitched a simulated game, 49 pitches this morning, look good. The Yankees may be getting him back in some capacity, even if it's just for a couple of starts in September. He can make a difference,
right?
Jorge Soler of the Chicago Cubs. We got to take a look at this at bat. Jorge Soler, the Chicago Cubs, their outfield prospect, made his major league debut yesterday. And homered in his first at bat.
That's awesome.
On the fourth pitch he saw, it was a 2-1 count. The Cubs, Kevin, we've talked about them. The Cubs are absolutely loaded with young position players.
They're getting better.
They are doing it they are building a team totally counterintuitively. They're building it around young hitting. And they'll figure out the pitching as they go along. Most teams, i.e. the Blue Jays, are stocking up on young pitchers over young hitters. You saw that swing.
That's awesome. I mean, it's more of a – now, obviously, he's a young guy, and he's going to have to learn, because first time around, he's going to have the advantage. Second time around, Book's going to be out on what he can and can't hit. They just don't know what he can hit right now.
That is so quick.
That's crazy. That's what they were saying. He hits fastballs. That's what young guys, if you can hit fastballs and lay off of breaking balls, which means that's the difference between minor leagues and the big leagues, is breaking balls. Breaking balls are not, they look like strikes in the big leagues, and they're not. Minor leagues, normally, if they look like a strike, they're probably a strike because they're trying to get it in the strike zone. Big leagues, they try to make it look like one to get you to go out of the zone and swing at it. If a young guy can hit the fastball all the time and lay off the breaking ball, man, he's going to be hard to beat. And he's got an aggressive attack the baseball swing, which, well, really you can't teach that. I mean, you're either born with it, a quick batter, you're not, and he has some kind of quick bat. Can't teach that. It's fun to watch, and And it's like you said, the Cubbies are getting good in a hurry.
And they're in a division where you have to get good in a hurry. That mm-hmm. is the best division in baseball.
Yeah, and if they can go out and get a at least one veteran pitcher, maybe possibly two, man, with that young hitting, oh man, that's going to be a lot of fun to watch. And because the name of the game nowadays, it was outpitch teams and get timely hits. Now it's out hit teams and get timely pitching. If you can do that, you're going to win a lot of games.
And we should mention that we had Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe, longtime columnist on Primetime Sports earlier this week. And we were talking about this sort of counterintuitive Cubs rebuild. And he said that one of the concerns the Boston Red Sox have is that there's been this idea out there that John Lester would re-sign with the Red mm-hmm. Sox in the offseason. Well, Theo Epstein, the former GM of the Boston Red Sox, is now overseeing the Cubs rebuild. And the concern in Boston is that John Lester ends up signing the Chicago Cubs. Now, if you take this young lineup, you add a John Lester and maybe find another veteran starter someplace.
Well, John Lester, I think, is going to look at it. Can you win now? Well, next year, probably the Red Sox can win now. Cubs next year, probably not, because you have young hitting. It's going to be lots of growing pains. They're going to struggle. They're going to go and lose 10 games in a row, but then they could go on a 20-game winning streak. That's the way young players do it. And is it going to be hard for the Cubbies to make the playoffs next year? Probably. Is it going to be hard for the Red Sox to make the playoffs next year? Probably not as hard. So, you know, John Lester, I think, that's every player wants to be in that position where he can go, I don't know if I want to go there, but that place looks really fun. So, you know, every player wanted that. I wanted that when I was a player. John Lester's going to have it next year.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out, and frankly see how much money John Lester ends up getting. He's gonna break the bank.
He's a lot.
He's gonna break the bank. So that's it for Baseball Central today. Just to remind you, the Jays have the day off. They're all out at the Jose Bautista Golf Tournament. Mm-hmm. They will start a 3-game series against the New York Yankees tomorrow at the Rogers Center. And it'll be Mark Burley against Chris Capuano, battle of left-handers. The Jays are honoring Derek Jeter before Sunday's game. That will be his last appearance in a Yankees uniform.
Cool. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is. It'll be his last appearance in a Yankees uniform in Toronto. So we'll talk about that tomorrow. We'll get you set for that. And, the last chance to see Derek Jeter, it's going to be pretty cool. And I'm hoping Toronto fans here. This is a city that has always booed Derek Jeter. I never tell anybody not to boo. I mean, your fans, you can do what you want, but I'm really hoping that he gets some respect from people in the city this weekend, because he's been a hell of a player for
cheer
a long
first
time.
First and boo second. How about that?
That's a way to do it.
Well, cheer when they're
standing
giving
ovation at the start, and then boo the hell out of him.
Cheer when they're giving him a rocking chair, and then boo him when he comes to the plate. Simple.
That's right. We will not have Jays baseball tonight because they do have the day off, but we will have baseball and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. The Buffalo Bisons will be in Scranton Wilkes-Barre against the Rail Riders as the Bisons continue their pursuit in the International League. Kendall Graveman will be on the mound for the Bisons. Chris LaRue, Canadian-born pitcher, will be on the mound for Scranton Wilkes-Barre. Again, that's at 7 o'clock on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. The Buffalo Bisons and Scranton Wilkes-Barre. Kendall Graveman.
Go watch the game.
You heard a lot of talk about Kendall Graveman. He's a guy that has quietly yet rapidly risen through this organization. He's an interesting prospect, to say the least. And he will be on the mound for the Bisons tonight. So that's it for us. For Kevin Barker and Kevin Pillar, I'm Jeff Blair saying thanks so much for joining us in Baseball Central. As always, we are brought to you by Home Hardware. Talk to you tomorrow, everybody.